let's get to the business aspect of things, right? It's Wednesday. We like to talk about the money. I want to go into Biden, right? Because Biden is going to receive a lot of credit for this, and I think that he should receive some credit for it. But Biden has decided that he wanted to put 100% tariffs. Shout out to Sister. I'm going to read that super chat shortly. 100% tariffs on Chinese automakers. Take a look.
President Biden is taking a hard line on Chinese imports, charging a 100% tariff on electric vehicles. And that's just one product the administration is targeting, a move the president says will help U.S. companies counter the Chinese government's, quote, cheating and anti-competitive practices. CBS's Nancy Cordes is at the White House with what this means for American consumers.
After years of warning China, President Biden put his pen where his mouth is today, quadrupling the tariff on Chinese EVs from 25% to 100%.
I'm determined that the future of electric vehicles will be made in America by union workers, period.
The move comes as EVs from Chinese automaker BYD gain traction around the world at about half the price of U.S.-made cars.
One thing that my grandfather used to always tell me are good things aren't cheap and cheap things aren't good.
Dorian Jimenez owns a Chevy dealership in Oklahoma City.
I'm glad that our government is going that direction, and the more things that we can keep in-house, the greater it can be for us.
Biden's hikes apply to far more than EVs. Chinese steel and aluminum will be hit with a 25% tariff. Solar panel cells will go to 50%, and so will Chinese syringes and needles.
Biden finally listened to me. He listens to me.
Former President Donald Trump hiked tariffs on a much broader swath of Chinese goods in 2018.
And you know what the funny part about it is? And this is the part that I want to emphasize. Trump literally did this in 2018. Biden in 2019, when they were campaigning for the presidential election that wound up taking place in 2020, actually said that he was against what Trump did when it came to tariffs on Chinese products at the time, especially considering that Trump also renegotiated the NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, with both Canada and Mexico. Let me say that again. At the time, Trump had already instituted and had became embroiled in a tariff war, which is one of the things that's been credited with helping to save the steel industry. And he went in during his presidency from 2016 through 2020 and implemented a trade war because he said that the ability for Chinese companies to do business and make profit from American companies, including automakers and stuff like that, was imbalanced. It was imbalanced. He accomplished more in his 4 years than any of the presidents in our lifetime, right? Now, here was the caveat, though, right? And this is the part that people didn't pay attention to. Biden never, ever removed the very tariffs that Trump put in place in order to protect American workers. But we don't get that part of the story. Let me say that again. He never, ever removed the tariffs that was in place from Chinese companies or against the Chinese. He never removed the tariffs. He kept them in place because he's seen the effectiveness of it. And so now what he did was he piggybacked off of what the Trump administration had already implemented, and then he implemented more tariffs. Now, let me give Biden a little bit of credit, all right? Let me give Biden a little bit of credit. Because I always want to be objective, even though I think he's a terrible president, always want to be objective. I think that this is a good thing. I think that it is a phenomenal thing, and I credit him with actually doing and continuing the thing that was already in place that was good for the American industries. Because, man, one of the reasons that is really good is not because capitalism shouldn't be free. It's because when you look at a comparison of what it takes in order to do business over in China versus what China is doing as far as doing business over in other countries, it's incredibly imbalanced, 1,000% imbalanced. So much so that Tesla was the first and one of the only manufacturers that was able to go over there and didn't have to partner with a Chinese company and then get all of their intellectual property stolen as a result of it in order to be able to do business over in China. And then all of the automakers, especially the electric automakers over there in China, was subsidized, meaning that they were able to operate at a much lower cost, which would have then drove a lot of the automakers over here in the United States of America out of business. And so he had to, Biden had to, because you can't say that you supported the union when then you letting everybody infiltrate, such as when Clinton did. Clinton, yeah, let's revisit it. Because all of y'all thought that Clinton was awesome. Clinton sold out American manufacturing to foreign investment 10 times out of 10, 100%. He gave it away. He gave away all of y'all jobs, and he sold y'all on a lie, and he was the one that helped build up the housing crisis that then ultimately imploded in 2008. 1,000%. So, yeah, I think that this is a good thing, but let's continue.
At the time, Biden argued that would spark a trade war, raising costs for everyone.
He did.
We're going out.
Biden argued at the time that it would spark a trade war. Let me say it again. Biden absolutely was 100%. These politicians, they bank on the fact that y'all forget and that y'all got short memories because y'all like shorts and y'all don't like long form content. They're banking on the idea that you guys have short memories and you don't forget what it is that they said, because he was 100% against putting tariffs on Chinese and Chinese companies from doing business over here in the United States of America. 1,000% he said that he was against it, and he said it would spark a trade war. And look what he's doing. He's piggybacking off of it, and he's absolutely, positively implementing a trade war by making sure that he slaps a 100% tariff on any Chinese company that's choosing to do business inside of the United States of America, specifically when it comes to manufacturing and battery sales.
After the wrong thing with China.
Even today, reaction from around the country was mixed. Colorado's Democratic Governor Jared Polis said this is horrible news for American consumers and a major setback for clean energy. This tax increase will hit every family.
But the White House argues China's unfair trade practices have been hurting manufacturing states like Michigan and Pennsylvania. Those happen to be swing states as well. But officials here insist these new tariffs have nothing to do with the fact that we're in an election year, Nora.
Cap, because if he wanted to slap some tariffs on some people, then how come he didn't do it in 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023? Why is, listen, y'all got to start paying attention to the timelines. Why wasn't these tariffs implemented prior to 2024 election season, endorsement from the UAW, United Steelworkers? How come these tariffs wasn't implemented prior to that? Neither here nor there. Let's continue. Let me switch over to another report. I want to get it from another perspective.
This is a really big moment for the global economy because Joe Biden has imposed these tariffs. Let me just kind of show you what we're talking about with tariffs. Of course, that's the amount that you have to pay to get goods into a given country. And in the US, up until recently, actually, there was a standard car tariff, the most favoured nation tariff, as it's known, 2.5%. So it wasn't much for China. It wasn't much for other places that are trying to send cars to the US. Then, of course, Donald Trump came in and he raised it. He raised it by 25%. A lot of people thought Joe Biden wouldn't continue that, but now he has actually gone further. He's doubled down. Actually, he's kind of quadrupled down on Donald Trump. A new 100% tariff. That's on top of the 2.5%. So actually, it's 102.5% tariffs. Enormous tariffs. And why is the US doing this? Well, partly it's because they're really worried about competition. They're worried about competition from China. And this chart really kind of shows you that story. It shows you global exports of cars from all of these countries. So the biggies, like the US, like...
So y'all like foreigns. That's what y'all say. Y'all like foreign women. Y'all like foreign cars. You like foreign foods. So you got South Korea, right? You got the Hyundais and the Kias. You got Germany. Yeah, I like Germany. I like Stuttgart, right? And so you got Germany, which, you know, you got your Porsche, your Mercedes. You got all of that, right? And then you got Japan, which is your Hondas and your Toyotas. And so these are cars that are exported into the United States of America by country.
Germany, like Japan, and look at China, okay? So the red line here, it was really low for years and years and years, up until recently when it has overtaken everyone else. And why has it done that? It's because of electric cars. China's so dominant when it comes to electric cars. But here's the thing, they're not dominant when it comes to electric car imports into the US. This is showing you where the US is getting its electric cars from right now.
And this is one of the reasons why I keep telling you guys that y'all keep saying, we don't like electric cars, we don't like electric cars. I get it. I feel you. American tastes and the consumers within the United States of America is completely different from the rest of the world. But guess what? We're in a global economy. One thing that I will give Biden credit for is that he has the foresight to implement the infrastructure bill that ultimately incentivizes us to make the transition over to electric vehicles because it's coming no matter what. Why? Because again, it's in a global economy. One of the problems with American consumers and one of the problems with American voters is that they only see things through the lens of their own city, their own state, and their own country. And so even though you may say, well, I don't like Tesla, I hate Tesla. Well, basically you killing Tesla essentially opens the door to the BYDs and the Volkswagens and all of this stuff of people that are ultimately going to sell a S-load of cars here inside the United States of America. So we can look at it based off of our lens and what we've been trained to like or whatever, because we like our Hellcats, our Chargers, we like the V8s and all of that stuff. Cool. But guess what? We have to make decisions based off of a global competition and what's best for our children. And so you can always say, oh, okay, well, I don't like it, or I'm pissed at it, or I'm pissed at the infrastructure deal. But the reality is that if you want to continue to compete on a global scale and you don't want to continue to downgrade the American manufacturing process and you don't want to continue to import cars of something that's coming anyway, then you have to evolve and you have to adapt and you have to embrace what it is that they're doing on a global scale. Because when automatic manufacturers are looking at things, they're not just looking to compete based off of here what's going on in America. They're looking to compete on what's going on in the world. Ford sells cars in China. Ford sells cars in Europe. GM sells cars in China. GM sells cars in Europe. GM sells cars everywhere, right? And when I went over to Tokyo, I think I seen some Teslas, but I didn't see any GM, Ford, or anything like that, right? And so my point is that, you know, when you're looking to make a move or when you're making a decision, you make it a decision based off of the long-term view and not just the short-term impact, right? We're going to say, oh, my God, only thing we want is oil-based cars or we want gasoline cars. I feel you. I like gasoline cars, too. But also I'm paying attention to what exactly type of future that my daughter is going to live in. Let's continue.
And look at China, red bit over there. It's really small, actually, if I kind of just pull that across there. You see it's one of the smallest importers into the US. But, of course, you've got the EU there, you've got South Korea. A big question is how many Chinese components are going into Mexican cars that then go over the border. We don't really know what's going to happen with that. What we do know is a lot of the components inside of electric cars, because it's not just about the car, it's about what goes inside it, they also come from China. So you've got the battery, the cell, as people call it. This is showing you global dominance of China. The red bits there is Chinese dominance. That dark bit there, that's the US. You can see how dominant China is when it comes to the cells, but also the chemicals inside the cells. The cathodes, China massively dominant there. The anodes, the graphite that you need inside these batteries as well. And we could extend this and look at other things as well, like hydrogen, you could look at concrete, you could look at steel. China incredibly dominant. And all of the point here is the US is trying to increase its share, but it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be difficult too, not just for batteries, but also for solar as well, because look at how China is way ahead of the rest on that as well. So it's only
I don't understand why y'all disagree. What do you disagree with? I tell you what, just for the sake of conversation, I'm going to entertain you. I'm going to oblige you, okay? I'm going to allow for you to be able to come up and say whatever it is that you disagree with and give me the insight behind why I'm wrong when it comes to how it is that we're supposed to be pivoting ourselves and positioning ourselves as far as manufacturing is concerned. I will oblige you. I am going to drop the link in the chat for anybody that disagrees with me, and you are more than welcome to be able to come up here, and you don't have to be on camera. But help me to understand, specifically when it comes to manufacturing electric vehicles, what do you disagree with? Nah, don't get scared now. Feel free. I just dropped the link in the chat. I'm not going to pin it to the top of the chat. But feel free to come up here and help me to understand where I'm wrong at, all right? Let me go ahead and show you this last video, and then we're going to continue over as far as this conversation about manufacturing and the tariffs over in China.
Well, we're going to kick things off with a deep dive into President Biden's tariffs. Biden is raising tariffs on clean energy goods from China. That includes things like electric vehicles, batteries, and solar panels even. So let's take a step back and define what a tariff is. Tariffs are a tax imposed by one country on the goods and services imported from another country. So why raise tariffs? Well, President Biden is concerned that China is using unfair trade practices to keep most of the global production and manufacturing in the country. So in an effort to promote industry growth here in America, Biden is raising the rate of the tariffs on certain goods imported to the U.S. from China, hoping American companies then will build more here instead of buying from overseas.
Hey, what's going on, Jarius? Jarius.
Hello?
Hey, what's going on? What do you disagree with?
I know we were, you were on the subject about EVs and how we need to position ourselves as a country for a global market. What I disagree with you about is the whole global market thing. One of the problems with EVs is that some of the other markets, even they don't even like EVs like that. They don't like that the governments over there are forcing on them with the whole emission standards and, you know, how they want to move to a pollution-free environment. So, like, even them, they don't like it either, because what's causing them to do is their businesses can't, they're having problems transitioning, because now you have to invest in all this infrastructure as far as doing the charging stations, where are you going to get the power from, and investing inside the trucks and technology, finding people to fix it, the dealer support, the batteries, manufacturing. Like, it's
so
a lot
what,
that
what
goes
country
into
in particular
that.
Are you referring to? Give me an example.
So I know, so it's this guy that I watch inside the UK. His name is Daniel Ashfield. He has a construction company and big YouTuber, black guy actually. He has this construction business, and he, for the most part, he has probably 40, 50 trucks. But one of the things that he's been running into over there, and he's been working with their local government, is he's been running into the issue of trying to transition his whole fleet into electric trucks. So he was just talking about how much it costs to do that. So they've been looking into different options, whether to subsidize it, whether to give him a tax incentive to transition his fleet of trucks. So that was just one of the things, but it's just, you know,
let's back up here. So you're talking about costs, right? And you're talking about a business person that's saying that they're trying to figure out what the cost is to continue to transition over into what eventually is going to become a norm within their market, right?
Right.
So, again, that's just a normal business expense that somebody is complaining about. That does not necessarily mean that there are not massive countries that are absolutely positively going over into moving over into EVs. That's just the way that it is. China itself is literally the second biggest market when it comes to automobile purchases and manufacturing. And they literally are moving into a 100% EV future. And so if you want to compete in the second biggest purchasing market and growing, where people are literally only buying EV vehicles, you have to transition.
I think I understand what you're saying. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have EVs. What I'm saying is for our government to force it down our throats, to almost mandate it. If technology is better, if it's that much better, trust me, you know, I believe in capitalism. Capitalism will solve that. But it's the It's us being forced is what we don't like. Currently, you see that.
Listen. Capitalism doesn't solve for infrastructure. That's literally what we pay taxes for. Capitalism doesn't solve for infrastructure at all. So I'll give you an example. One of the reasons why it's so difficult for us to adjust when it comes to anything that happens within the economy as far as moving in a completely different direction. I'll give you an example. AI, right? We aren't ready for artificial intelligence because we have no way to continue to regulate it inside of the United States of America, right? There are no consequences. There's no way for us to be able to punish offenders. If somebody creates a deep fake video, if somebody messes with the election process or whatever, it's very difficult for us to be able to adjust for that. Content creation is another thing, right? Content creation is big, but the IRS has literally been very, very slow to adjust to a completely different new field, even though social media has been around for a long time. And so what you find in a lot of content creators doing is that they're having a hard time debating between the IRS as far as what a write-off is and what isn't, because it takes a long time for the government to continue to adjust to whatever the market is going. EVs, they largely ignored EVs because they didn't think that Tesla would be a thing. And now what they're saying is the biggest problem is they're saying, well, we don't have the grid, we don't have the infrastructure. Well, that's because we never invested in the infrastructure. If you look at a lot of these other countries, right, the market supports the infrastructure upgrades because they then invest more money into their roads, they invest more money into their infrastructure and less money into social services, which then allows for the market to mature the way that it's supposed to when you're looking at it from a global view. And so you're only looking at it and you saying, well, we're not ready for it, or it shouldn't be forced down our throat. What do you think that seatbelts are? What do you think that emissions is? All of these things are literally forced on us in order to create an environment based off of whoever it is that votes, whoever it is in office. So when you get a Joe Biden in office, even though I didn't vote for him, when you get somebody like a Joe Biden in office and he says, hey, listen, I got this infrastructure deal we about to do. We about to do this. We about to do the CHIPS Act and all of this stuff. He told y'all what he was going to do. When you get a Brandon Johnson, when you get a Brandon Johnson in office, he tells you what he's going to do. And so when you vote for these people in the office, whether you disagree with them or not, they then are in charge to make the deals or to improve the infrastructure based off of where they see the economy going. And so right or wrong, like it or not, when you vote these people in office, it's not that they're forcing it on you. They giving you what they already campaigned that they were going to do as far as making sure that they compete in the global market.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the infrastructure, I agree with every single last point that you just made when you talk about infrastructure. America hasn't invested inside the infrastructure. There is no reason why we don't have those speed rail trains like how the other countries do it. Why we got bridges that are and you up in Michigan, how y'all had, you know, water treatment plants that are literally failing. Same here with me. I live inside Toledo, Ohio, and we had the same problem too. America definitely has aging infrastructure. It definitely needs to be addressed. I think the problem is with me, when it comes down to Biden, if they do have this aspiration of forcing us, it doesn't seem like the Infrastructure Act was enough to get the infrastructure that needs to be built to make sure that EVs will be a good choice and a good option for business owners. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Infrastructure Act was enough. I think we're going to need literally pretty much a total overhaul.
Well, especially everything is transitional. Everything, it's not supposed to be a one shot. It's supposed to be a long-term deal, right? So, I mean, I don't completely disagree with you. I'm just saying that for a lot of people, they always say that they don't want change, but change is constant. It's coming. And whether you like it or not, the United States of America is no longer the place that determines what change is going to happen in a global marketplace. We used to be the market leaders and say everybody was, you know, is following a Pied Piper of America. that doesn't happen anymore.
Oh, no. No, and I agree with you to some extent. It's just, what is the timeline for that? How do we transition? I get what you're saying. We are going to transition to, you know, other ways of power and vehicles and stuff like that. I do think electric motors is the way, but I'm thinking more so hybrids would be probably more dominant than a full-out electric vehicles will be. That's what I think. But it's just, how we make sure that it's a smooth transition?
It's never going to be a smooth transition, ever.
You don't
think so?
It's
going to be kicking and screaming all along the way.
Got it.
I appreciate you. Thank you for coming up, big dog.
Absolutely, bro.
All right. Is it Leroy? Let's see if we can get Leroy up here. What's up, Leroy? Leroy going once. Leroy going twice. Steve. Steve, you there?
I'm here, AD. How you doing?
What's going on? What's your thoughts?
Big fan, man. Usually I agree with you on most stuff, but mm-hmm. I'm coming at this from two ways. I'm a lifelong Wall Streeter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a trained mechanic. I'm an ASE certified engine builder in a previous life.
Got you.
So I'm coming at you from the perspective of the infrastructure, right? There was an article out there maybe a year and a half ago, somewhere outside of Chicago. They wanted to transition everything over to electric vehicles, garbage trucks, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
When they reviewed this proposal, they came out and they said the amount of energy that it would take for the base charging station for all of these city vehicles, et cetera, would exceed the amount of power that the city takes in right now to power all homes, everything all combined. It comes down to energy density. So I think maybe in the future, but you're talking battery technology has to take a leap 20, 30 years to get where you're talking
about.
I don't think so.
So if you, for example, if you look at Tesla's Powerwall, for example, and how they've basically transitioned a lot of these countries to be supplemental off the grid, Tesla's infrastructure, which we don't even necessarily use here in the United States of America to a larger extent, Tesla's Powerwall and what it is that they've set up as far as in other countries absolutely puts energy back into the grid when they embrace it correctly. And so the way that we have our infrastructure set up currently versus how we should have it set up in the future. And I think that over time, technology continues to improve. One of the things that happens, especially when it comes to newer technology, is the more that we drive to it and the more that we adopt it, the further down the cost drives. I mean, the further down we drive the cost, which ultimately yields a more conducive environment for us to continue to invest in the infrastructure. But I do believe that there is technology that already exists, absolutely. Whether or not we want to embrace it or whether or not we're incentivized to do so is a completely different conversation.
So the Tesla Powerwall, you know, I just actually just went through maybe 8 or 10 different companies a proposal for solar for my house. Tesla Powerwall.
And I'm not just talking about, residential. I'm also talking about.
Oh, no, totally.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get that. And, you know, what was the other one? Enervest or Evergy or whatever it was just came out with a battery that they're saying, you know, has more charge cycles than the Tesla solar wall, you know, whatever the case is. At the end of the day, you still have a set amount of charge cycles before batteries, et cetera, have to be replaced. Mm-hmm. But overall, if we're talking about large solar farms.
I agree.
The amount of solar that you need currently, same thing.
I don't think it's just solar, though. I think that it's a lot of different energy infrastructure projects that could power that. Like, one of the things that we are really starting to lean more into is nuclear energy. You know, they're trying to get away from a lot more coal factories. So the actual energy storage, not the energy storage itself, but the infrastructure by which we generate electricity in the first place. I think that that's one of the things that we do have to solve. And I don't think that solar alone is the answer.
Oh, I'm with you, sir. Nuclear is our savior, and it's odd that the same people that are, you know, quote unquote pro environment are so anti-nuclear, you know, because of minor incidents throughout history that, you know, in this country are very limited compared to other countries. You know, France is a great example. Look at the amount of electricity they produce from nuclear. I'm totally on board with that. But I don't, you know, that's red tape and stuff in this country that red or blue, no matter who you ain't, that you're fighting a real uphill battle for.
Yeah.
For
I don't think that electric is the end all be all. I think that it's a stopgap.
It's fair enough.
I think that it's a stopgap. I think that it's a future temporary solution for a long-term problem.
But what do you think about individuals rejecting it at like the consumer level? I mean, look at what Ford completely turned around their EV production. Other than like Asian producers right now who are amping up, you know, Kia is coming out with a lot, but the U.S. companies are seeing their EV, you know, divisions, they're reducing them. Customers seem to be rejecting them tons of lots. I mean, I know you just bought a Porsche, right? Mm-hmm. You see what's going on when you want to try to get a GT3, right? They try to sell you three or four Taycans first.
I got a Taycan too. I got an
electric. Yeah, I know you do. But if you go on, like you go on Auto Trader, you see there's a ton of brand new Taycans out there coming straight from the dealership. So it's, you know, I think from a perspective of an individual consumer level, aside from infrastructure, I think it's expensive for the consumer. It's unreliable outside of a city. If you're doing any kind of drive, you know, I'm from New York. I'm down in Florida now, so I can tell you the difference from the amount of driving I did in New York, zero, and the amount of driving I do down here all day, every day. I drive
my car every day.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're in a city. It's a lot easier. Charging stations are more readily available.
I drive from the suburbs down into the city when I'm not in the city. So, like, for last night, a lot of people that was watching the After Hour show, you could tell that I was in my spot out in the suburbs, which is 45, 50 minutes outside of the city. And then I drive back down into the city, and I drive my Taycan every day.
And you don't find, even with the cold, you don't find a reduce in battery, or you don't have any issues ever?
Most of the time, I can get up to 300 miles on a charge.
That's pretty good.
And in wintertime, it probably reduces probably to about 270, 260, somewhere in there between 270 and 260.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not bad. Definitely not bad.
And I never go to a gas station. Not a gas station. I never go to a charging station. Mike, okay. I just set my stuff up overnight. Plug it in, and then I keep it moving. So, and I haven't seen any over 3 years. It's been almost 3 years since I had my Taycan. I haven't seen any battery degradation as far as it reducing the capacity in the battery itself. So,
have you had any?
Somebody said I won't travel in it. What are you talking about? I went all the way to Pittsburgh in a Tesla. I drove the Tesla all the way to Pittsburgh from Detroit to Pittsburgh and back. So I don't know what they're talking about.
So, I mean, that's the thing, and that there's a lot of, you know, conflicting information. You see, there was that congresswoman who did that trip in California who didn't make her destination, had to stop 6-7 times to refuel in a 2-day trip all the way down California.
And yeah, I didn't see that one, but yeah, I feel what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, and that's the infrastructure aspect of it, right? So, I mean, I don't think that it's a perfect solution. My argument is that it's coming. Regardless of whether we like it or not, it's coming.
Yeah, I'd like to see the advancement, like I said, prior to them kind of mandating it or making it more abundant. I'd like to see that. And I think too, from the mechanic perspective, right? Like a combustion engine, something goes wrong. I mean, obviously not these modern cars where everything is a mess under the hood, but something that somebody can generally fix, like, you know, in anything prior to 2015, you can replace a head gasket in your driveway over the weekend. Correct. You get into these electric cars, like your required dealership. And then you're talking about,
I haven't had any maintenance for the Tesla or the Porsche outside of wheels and tires.
That's great. But you are seeing some of these people talking about 20, 30K for a battery replacement. Some of these people are saying,
yeah, I don't know what that is, but I had zero maintenance. I probably save way more money. The only difference is, to be honest, I pay more in insurance.
Okay.
But I haven't, as far as the cost of owning, of having a vehicle itself, it's been a dream, to be honest with you.
Fair enough, man. Well, appreciate debating a different point of view.
Yep. So, all right, my friend, thank you, bro.
You will.
All right.